Hello, this is Eric Ponder, and I'm here with Homoso Molantwa.
That's perfect.
And she's marketing director of Fashion Academy Network.
That's correct.
We're talking about my Johannesburg and how your career in fashion and being in Johannesburg and living in Johannesburg all kind of fit together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lovely to meet you, and thank you for affording me the opportunity to share my love for Johannesburg. I grew up in the city, and I've been in the city, this country, for close to 40 years, and I've had a great experience watching what today we call fashion and what has evolved in the city and how fashion has contributed to the vibrancy and love and what makes people love this particular city, Johannesburg.
Yes, so can you tell me a little bit about your history in fashion?
Okay, so I started out obviously and I studied fashion in. Actually, I have a very funny history because I've studied in three different institutions studying fashion, and it's not so hard to study fashion. So one should really do it once and get it right, but I never did. I was very impatient. So the first time I studied a very small college where I was just putting my portfolio together, and then I studied at a university, Vets Technicon, actually a technical college, where I then did supposed to have done a three-year diploma, but I left in the second year because there was just no really fashion. When you asked, where am I going to work? What's the highest income I can make out of this?
And what time are we talking about?
This is now in 1990, right around 1997.
Okay.
Yeah. So obviously the country itself, democracy, we're just now democratized in 1994. Then 1997, I'm studying fashion. I go first year, naive, great, talented person, love the fashion industry, but then you realize there isn't really a fashion industry and you're probably going to end up being just a seamstress or just earning minimal income. There were magazines, and I could also become a model, so I started there, right?
Okay.
So I started doing some freelance work as a model and assisting some people with the magazines that were there, and that gave me more money than what I could have made as a young fashion designer.
And what were some of the names of those magazines?
Yeah.
During
so
that time?
The one popular one that was specifically for black consumers was True Love magazine. And that's the one I got to work for. There was Bona magazine, which from its history was actually more a political magazine, newsy magazine. So it gave you the current affairs, but also what people did outside of, the political arena. But True Love magazine was a black female magazine, still is, and still one of the highest selling magazine, considering that South Africa is a black country. Or at least highest circulation, even if it might not be the highest selling. I got to work for the magazine, and I understand, for example, that you would, in a family of black people, there'd be five different black women that would read the same magazine. Whereas if you have a white magazine, or if a magazine that is for white females, they would then have that just the person who bought it would be the only person who reads it.
Mm-hmm.
So True Love magazine then ends up having a higher circulation and therefore gets a better advertising rate, and it becomes a better, more successful magazine to advertise in than a white female magazine, which has a smaller population, but they have their buying power. Mm-hmm. They still do today. But in any case, so that's where my start in fashion was. I started as a fashion model. Then I assisted a couple of fashion editors that, were shooting my editorial pages. And I became a fashion assistant. Then I became a fashion editor. So the first magazine that I became a fashion editor to was True Love magazine. And then I did such a great job that I got recruited, headhunted to come and be fashion editor at Oprah magazine. And I think it had been in the country for about 4 years by then, and it was ailing a little bit in the advertising, especially for fashion. And by the time I had worked for them for close to 2 years, we had had the whole magazine filled with all whatever was available as fashion labels, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And also that by that time, now we're talking 2004, let's say 97 I studied, around about 2004. And by that time now, we've got a great, the fashion world is opening up to South Africa. They're looking at us as a possible market. You know, all the, we came out of sanctions now a good 10 years ago or so. And, you know, we are becoming a small onion market, but a market that, you know, they can send their old goods to sell and but then which are new goods because we are a season behind for us. So
also, would you consider Johannesburg to kind of be the epicenter of fashion in this country?
Oh, definitely. Almost the epicenter of everything, actually, in this country. So Johannesburg is probably the most cosmopolitan one. Even when you look at the stats about where people go to when they come to South Africa to visit, we still have the highest, and not just for business, but for leisure, which is quite strange considering that we don't have a beach or, our recreational places are mostly evening places. Unlike if you go to Cape Town, you have the mountain, you have the sea and, you know, all the beautiful scenery. But Johannesburg is the most cosmopolitan, the most visited city, and it's really an exciting place to be, you know.
And when you think of Johannesburg, many people say Johannesburg is the New York of Africa. So Johannesburg being the New York of Africa, and also this other kind of sense of this kind of youth market.
Yes.
So you talk about youth, you know, in South Africa, and I think they typically lead the way in fashion,
if
I'm not mistaken.
Certainly.
And then you have New York, Johannesburg being the New York of Africa. Mm-hmm. How did that kind of
come together? Okay. So, the youth lead because they are the ones who are more on the internet. They are the ones who are more exposed to what is really happening on the fashion scene. They are the ones who are watching the TV, whereas the older people, they're set in their ways, and they already have chosen, fallen in love, let's say, with the Ferragamo when Ferragamo was not in South Africa. And, you know, when Ferragamo comes, that's all they wear. And then, they're pretty much set in their ways. Whereas the young people are vibrant in the sense that they're still trying out things. They're, you know, following trends. And they're still, you know, from music to their social life. They really are the heartbeat of the city. And young people, it goes all the way from age 10 all the way to age 30. They are the most, you know, active of let's say the fashion and the social of and that's hence our fashion school. We can see that even the designers that are there, the older designers, yes, they do great work, but it's very safe. You know, they're not the ones who are going to give us the great South African designers or the international designers that are going to come out of Africa. They're not going to lead us. They already, you know, have calculated to be safe, how to do the right thing, and they're not tired, but it's safe. Yeah. You know.
So when we think about post-apartheid South Africa, how do we look at post-apartheid South Africa in the history of fashion in the country?
Yeah, I mean, having been segregated and having also had the sanctions that, you know, I don't know if you know the history of that, but we could not get any international goods in, you know, in order to help turn over the apartheid regime. So, you know, we literally, True Love magazine and Bona magazine for a black female person, that's all you had. Even television, I mean, we did not know much about what was happening in the rest of the continent. You didn't know about Kenya, Nigeria, so never mind New York or any other country. That comes 1994, suddenly everything is a boom. We have magazines that, you know, Elle magazine comes into the country. True Love now has a reach and a more vibrant story to tell. So there were all the people that had gone and left, all the black people that had gone and left to go to New York, people like Miriam Makeba and all of them who would read about in the magazines, but even in, you know, through in during apartheid, we were not allowed to be told too much about what mm-hmm. is going on with their lives or so. But having been a musician, you know, you could get a little bit of a story here and then. Bona magazine, for example, would cover those people, and so would see a little bit of what they're wearing. Mm-hmm. You know, in the 1940s, 1960s, the fashion was still beautiful, but it wasn't fashion. It was almost like a uniform of what people wore, what was available to them, and they wore it en masse, like in big numbers, you know. And then obviously people could not afford very much, so it was always secondhand goods. Then comes post 1994, the liberation comes, people work for themselves, women especially, you know, are going into the workplace, and things literally change. So it took a while, you know, like I said, from 1994 to 2000, it was still, you know, there were still fashion colleges, we were still teaching fashion, we were still having fashion magazines, but you could not really call it fashion. Mm-hmm. Until then, you had this influx of this international brands that came in. And with the influx of the international brands, you name it, your Louis Vuitton, you tell me a story before now about how everybody talked about Gap. Now Gap became, you understood that, oh, Gap is not actually a fashion brand. It's just a utility wear. That's something you wear, you know, on a Saturday when you're doing your barbecue or cleaning or just going jogging or so. So we understood what fashion is. And I mean, till today, we don't have fashion museums where you can go and see maybe a great African designer that, you know, used certain techniques to create all fabrics. But Africans as a people have such a rich history in what they've done. Now that we have seen, you know, what the Nigerians and do, the Ghanaians do, how they create their own cloth. Mm-hmm. So it's sad that it's still a bit slow in integrating, and there's fashion weeks that are trying to, you know, bring the rest of Africa together, to work together on the same platform and share ideas and knowledge. But because of Africa as a whole, our biggest challenge, one, is language. You know, we have so many languages. It's not like the whole of Africa speaks African, for example, you know. So we have so many languages, not just English and French. So we have the Franco-French, and so that alone makes a division. And then within South Africa, we have 11 official languages. So that that also brings another segregation. And then, of course, just movement of goods. Being able to move anything from South Africa to Nigeria is so expensive. You know, we don't have roads, we don't have rail that makes it easy to, you know, import or just move things between countries. So even just getting things to Zimbabwe, and obviously your neighbor is ailing, and then the neighbor after that is high, and then the neighbor after that is ailing. So the political landscape, there's still so many things that make it impossible, but those things should also create opportunities, you know. So it's the African person needs to start thinking differently in order to overcome what we have. Everybody has problems.
So in that dynamic or in that paradigm that you've just put out there so eloquently, can you put that within your current work of the Fashion Academy Network?
Yeah. So what we are hoping to achieve, you know, one of our directors who's writing our curriculum, Dr. Bram Kruger, he, in his PhD, he did his PhD on what we call, and I think it's actually, it's something that happens in many other countries as well. We call them, I'm going to forget the word now, cooperatives. So now cooperatives are formed. It's like six women can come together and form a cooperative. Those six women can come together and say, we're going to have a sewing machine or a couple of sewing machines. We're going to learn how to cut. We're going to learn how to make clothing, right? Mm-hmm. So, and they can be six, from six people and above. And the government has put money towards helping cooperatives, whether they're gardening or farming, whether they're clothing, textiles, sewing. So there's lots of these cooperatives that have come up everywhere. Now, with what he did is that he then put together his learnings about, fashion, how to make clothing, and how you could teach a woman within 3 months how to sew a garment, like a shirt, put together a shirt that can then be sold in numbers and be exported to Bloomberg, for example, you know, what they call, what's this apparel in I forget the name of the, how do you call what you would, let's say an American woman would wear to work, you know, like a jacket, a skirt, you know, just neat black little jacket that she could wear, or a shirt. You could teach a woman in 3 months to produce something like that. Now, if there's 6 women here and you multiply that by how many women, then we are able to create an economy of women who can actually, they have arms, legs, well-working minds. They can be within their own spaces. They don't have to be spending money trying to find work within the city, leaving their children, and, you know, creating even more social issues. So we're trying to see, one, we're going to obviously teach these young, vibrant people that we spoke about who live in Johannesburg, who have great ideas and have entrepreneurial minds. They're going to become employers, right? They're going to know, have the knowledge of what is a fashion designer. How do I make money in fashion? How do I become an entrepreneur? How do I take, create a product, export it, put it on the market and sell it? But then how do I then go find these kind of cooperatives and give them work? How do I then go and say, I have created this beautiful range of clothing. I think it's an exportable product. Now I need people who are going to take it and manufacture it. And I know, I have that knowledge to how then go into Bloomberg and say, I need a space in your market, you know, pay whatever levies they give you, use the AGOA, for example, to then export that product. And, you know, and we find that, we think that fashion is one way we can liberate the African woman, for example, or help liberate the African economy.
Right.
It is the one, it's a labor intensive, for one.
Yes.
You know, it's not going to come today that, you know, some prototype is going to come out and clothes are going to make themselves.
Mm-hmm.
There are still so many, and all these women that are in Africa who can sew, who have minds that are working, they have the ability to put a garment together and the will to save their families, to make an income and have pride in what they do. There's so many of them that can then come together and have these young students that we then teach how to then export a product and become, you know, global entrepreneurs.
Yeah. So my last question for you is, do you feel like this is an exciting time to be in fashion and having a role to play in this time?
Yes, I do. I feel so. I've studied fashion 3 times, and perhaps I was just preparing myself for this time when it comes. I've been to 3 different institutions, and this last time when I went, I'd seen that, you know what? Because the first 2 times when I went to do this fashion thing, I never finished, but I did manage to get into the fashion industry. I did manage to become a fashion editor even without a qualification. But I already saw that, you know, in this new economy, if you're going to get anywhere, you need real information, you need real education, you need something that you can compete with the international market with, you know, and education is the beginning of that.
Yes.
So hence I went back to school and educated myself. Mm-hmm. 2, the world has opened up, you know. I think we are no longer talking about just globalization being the big new thing, you know, with the technology and being the platform economy being the big new thing that has just made a universal world that we are now able to connect in different ways. I mean, the people who are now the Amazons and, you know, the new what do we call them? The new rich people are coming from the platform economy.
Yes.
So agility, being able to then say, I'm America, I'm not just going to set up 6 months and, you know, production and then China is the best place to go to. People are able to move things quickly move to economies that are serving them better, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so much is happening and so much information is available to all of us to make great decisions, quick decisions, and be able to react. And the fashion itself is changing, you know, the cycle of producing a garment that you then see 6 months later in a store, all of those things have changed. You know, so now things, it's like from the runway, it must be available. You know, we are using online. You know, we don't, there's no borders anymore. We are living in a borderless world. Therefore, it's not difficult. We, the issues that we have with the roads and things like that. Now, you know, you can just see it online today. I'm on Instagram. I say, oh my gosh, that's a beautiful dress. Love it. Where's this person? Oh, they're in Africa. Where's that? South Africa, Johannesburg. Click a button, place an order. In 3 days, it's delivered in Manhattan, you know? And it can happen. And it just takes people being given, directed in the, you know, in terms of a school, giving those students the right information and the right way of saying, this is what they knew. Give them the information. This is what the world, the vision, you know. So we need that. We need leadership now. We need visionaries. So we need people who can then say, this is what you can do. Africa, wake up. See, this is how you can do it. And it's possible, you know.
Well, Hamutal, thank you so much. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.